Hey, it's Bob here with episode 75 of the Artist Empowerment Radio podcast. On this one, I interview my friend Ariel Hyatt of Cyber PR fame. And it's a great interview. We talk a lot about crowdfunding, you know, how to raise money directly from your fans. We also talk about overcoming fear when you step outside of your comfort zone and you take on a big project like she has with this ambitious multi-book fundraising campaign. Just a little footnote before we jump into this. I did record and release this in the final days of a fundraising campaign that she is doing through a site called Rocket Hub. And so at first you may think, well, if I listen to it after that, it's not timely or whatever. But au contraire, with these tips that Ariel shares about what she's learned from doing a fan funding campaign and what she's learned from other artists and the people that run these types of sites is invaluable. It's timeless no matter when you listen to it, especially the fear stuff, overcoming those little negative voice in your head. We also talk a little bit about how to offer things to your fans and supporters in ways that will bring in more money. So we can use that no matter when you listen to this. But if you happen to listen to it in the final days of her campaign, you can go and check that out and see what she's up to and maybe even support her in that effort. I think you really enjoy this interview on the other side of this little guitar riff. Enjoy. Hey, this is Bob Baker, and I am on the phone with a dear friend. I think that's actually a term that she's used to refer to me, and I'm going to return the favor, and I'm talking about Ariel Hyatt. Hello, Ariel.
Hello.
We've known each other for several years now. I think we go back to like 2005, 2006, and we collaborated on a live music publicity boot camp, I think in 07 or something, which is now, my God, is that like 6, 7 years ago?
It's incredible how fast the time goes. And then we stood next to each other in booths at the taxi convention for many years, and I had the privilege and pleasure of spending one of my birthdays speaking at your conference. It was actually the first time I ever did a solo presentation. So we do go back. We go back.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was June of 2008, and it was the Indie Buzz Boot Camp, a one-time only weekend event. And that's right, you came on your birthday, and as much speaking as you've done, I don't think I even realized that was your first solo presentations.
Yeah, it was the first one without, you know, being on a panel or something like that. And since then, it's been about 60 different conferences and panels and masterclasses and keynotes. But I owe a lot to you for believing in me before I started my world adventures.
Oh, that's sweet. And you have been on many adventures since then. So for many years, you were born and raised in New York. You moved to Colorado or the Denver area where you worked in PR, came back to New York. You've been running Ariel publicity for a while, but some years ago you started Cyber PR. So I'm kind of giving you giving people my summary at least of who you are and what you do. Is that a fair overview?
That is a fair overview. That sums it up.
Yeah. Does Ariel Publicity, I mean, it still exists, right? Or has it kind of been folded into?
Well, it's funny. We actually, just a couple of months ago, we didn't really make a big official announcement around it. I decided to rename the company Cyber PR. So we've buried Ariel Publicity. It served me beautifully in my 20s and 30s. And now that the company is 17 years old, I decided it was time to send the little logo off to college. So it's now called Cyber PR, and we have Cyber PR music for bands and musicians, and then we have cyberpr.com for non-music clients, and 2012 marked our first year where we started working non-exclusively for musicians, and it's been fun as an entrepreneur to break out and work with other types of clients, but Ariel Publicity is definitely the soul of it.
Cool. No, it's been great to watch you evolve and what you offer and what you teach and all that good stuff over these years. So I would like to use this audio interview for a couple of things. We're going to talk about crowdfunding or crowdsourcing. There's so many different names for it, because actually as we record this, we're in the last few days of something along those lines that you are doing. But even if people listen to it after that, you know, the
the date of your particular campaign, I think I'd like to touch on some things I think that'll be sort of timeless and helpful for people no matter when they listen to it. But let's hope that they do listen to it in these vital few days of your campaign. So you're actually doing, as an author and a teacher, you're doing a crowdfunding campaign at, where I think it's pretty ambitious. You actually want to publish like 3 books in the coming year?
Yeah. So I have 3 books actually written, and as I was looking at the schedule for publishing and getting them properly edited and copy edited and designed and then properly published and distributed with a little bit of a marketing budget, I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to ask my community to help me do this. I could bootstrap this like I've done my other 3 books, or I could really do it right. So I launched a crowdfunding campaign for not only these 3 books. One is for musicians, one is for non-musicians, and one is for professors in the music business who are interested in teaching what we do, cyber PR here at my agency, and it's really a teacher's guide, so they can take students through social media and online. And then I'm also doing an online course, which I'm raising money to properly edit, record, and deliver to people who decide to study with me.
That's awesome. We could talk about some of the aspects of crowdfunding and whatever, however time allows, and I do want to get your, even though you haven't completely finished the campaign, you've been through a lot of it, and I'm sure you have some insights on maybe do's and don'ts for other people that are going to pursue this. But I know one of the aspects doing the crowdfunding thing is choosing an amount, like a goal. Like, you don't want to make it too small, but you don't want to make it too large, because a lot of these sites like Kickstarter, you know, they won't, if you don't reach your goal, you don't get any of the funding. It's an all or nothing sort of deal. And so you chose $50,000, which is
which right now I wish I had chosen 25, but I chose 50 because I thought I really wanted to throw the hat over the proverbial wall and go for it. It is a tremendous amount of money to ask for, and right now we're at around 72%, so we're not quite there, but we're getting closer every day. I've got 5 days left in the campaign. Probably by the time this goes live, it'll be 4 days left. It ends on January 14th. Yes, I did choose 50,000. I thought, why not? If it goes well, fantastic. If it doesn't totally reach its goal, that's also an enormous lesson to learn too. So that's it. And I chose a platform that I will receive the portion that does get raised whether or not we hit the goal. Unlike,
oh really? Okay, I didn't know that. Because I was going to ask you about that. You're using Rocket Hub, I believe.
Yep.
Site. And so the site that sort of gets a lot of the buzz is Kickstarter. That's probably the premier, the one that gets the most media coverage. But I haven't noticed people using other platforms. So was that one of the reasons you chose Rocket Hub, or was?
One of the reasons I chose Rocket Hub really was Brian Meese, the founder, was a student of mine and took a social media mastery course with me. And he loved what I taught so much, he got inspired to launch his own crowdfunding platform. And so I did it because I personally affected him. He's a great musician and a great entrepreneur with a great vision. And I thought, I've always been the underdog in the music business, and I wanted to go to the underdog crowdfunding site that I also wanted to know that if I had questions or comments or anything, I could get the head of it on the phone and talk to him. And Brian's very accessible. And I am writing a book about crowdfunding, I have reached out to the Kickstarter people over and over and over, and not a single one of them will get back to us and talk to us about what we want to know. But every other platform has, the founders of the platform have gotten back to us. So Indiegogo and Rocket Hub and Pledge Music, I'm dear friends with Benji from Pledge. So, you know, I thought, let me go with a platform that I really that I know and love and trust and can get on the phone, because as Derek Sivers says, it all starts with who you know.
Exactly. Oh, that's cool. That's an interesting story. That is really, really cool that the founder of Rocket Hub was somebody who learned from you, and now you're using his platform, and it's great to see how we inspire each other. So that's good to know. Okay, so it's not an all or nothing situation with Rocket Hub, which might actually make it up. On one hand, it would make it appealing for people to use and to set an ambitious goal. But I know, isn't that sort of one of the things with Kickstarter, when people who are kind of on the fence, when they know it's an all or nothing and they can make a difference? You know, do you think that might motivate people when it comes down to the wire?
I think it does. I think it does, but I also know a lot of artists that have tried Kickstarter and have gotten really close, and then they've had their heart broken because it didn't quite happen. So, you know, I think there's definitely two ways of looking at it. So I think either are good. It really depends on your propensity for heartbreak and or going back and trying it another time. Those would be the real.
Well, cool. Well, I do want to. Yeah, there's a couple of topics I want to get to here. But since we're kind of on the roll with the crowdfunding, and I know as part of this whole deal, you're actually creating a book on crowd or some sort of a resource on crowdfunding and best practices as mm-hmm. part of this publishing campaign, right?
That's true. So I started it actually a couple of years ago with John Ostro, who's at the time was running Mic Control and is now my PR director. But we did start writing a guide to crowdfunding, and we never quite finished it. And so while I was thinking about options for what I wanted to offer my community for this campaign, I thought, you know what, I'm going to finish this book and throw in an ebook as part of the deal for anyone in 2013 and beyond that would like to do their own crowdfunding campaign. I'd like to help more people succeed doing it. And now that I'm doing it, I've really learned a lot about how it works and the ins and outs and a lot of the emotions that come up when you're asking for money. So I actually am looking really forward to writing this.
Cool. So here you are. I know you still haven't completed you're on the verge of being at the end of the campaign. So can you share just a couple of top things that you've learned? Because I imagine even before we hit the recording, you were, you know, if you hope you don't mind me saying, you were commenting on how, you know, hectic this has. There's a lot of work involved here. So what tips can you share maybe that come to mind here?
I would say that when you are doing a crowdfunding campaign, the thing that you really want to keep in mind is it is a lot of work. There is a lot of things that you need to prepare for that you probably wouldn't have really considered. Things like you want to have graphics for the things you're giving away. You need to build a landing page. You need to figure out, you know, first and foremost, what platform are you going to raise it on, just like we were just talking about? Do you want to do an all or nothing, or do you want to do something that gives you a partial amount of money? You want to decide on the timing of your campaign. If you're going to go on tour, or if you've got like family obligations or holidays, you know, you want to make sure that you're doing it at the right time. You also want to think about who you might be partnering up with. So like I asked you to give a bonus for people that that funded at a certain amount, and I asked Banzoogle and CD Baby and Topspin and Carla Lynn Hall and Jay Frank and a lot of other fabulous people to contribute different things, and so that took some time to ask everyone to get all that together. And then you really do have to map it out. You know, you've got to make a video, you have to create the rewards, you need to figure out if you're going to be blogging it or videoing it, you need to write the newsletters that go out to your community, banners, skins for your social media pages. You want to make sure that whenever anyone's coming near you, they're well aware of your crowdfunding campaign and they are set up to contribute. So it definitely takes a lot of setup.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And yes, I did. Yes, contributed. It's like access to one of my online courses as part of that deal that I was happy to do. And so I know I'll just need to ask you about one aspect of it and get your thoughts on this, and then I'm going to ask you about another important topic here. But so you and I, being both students and teachers of marketing, know that sometimes when you give people too many choices. Like when you're selling something, you know, you want to make the choices easy, you know. And I've always heard that, you know, no more than like three choices of things. But I noticed on a lot of Kickstarter campaigns, even Amanda Palmer's, which I think was the highest grossing music Kickstarter project, there was like, you know, ungodly numbers of choices and levels that you can participate at. I just counted, and I think you have seven different ones. But what's your philosophy on how many choices to give people and how you differentiate them and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And so I consulted with Rocket Hub and said, you know, please tell me what the right amount is. And they all said, everyone on the team there said, you should have seven choices. Seven levels is the right amount. So that is what I decided to do. And with that, I had to choose, you know, what exactly I was going to offer. I decided not to do a $1 or a $5 offering. The first offering is $20, and I decided to pack each thing with a lot of oomph. And so that's how I tiered it. And then they told me kind of, you know, the best ways to price things, because I didn't really know the best way to do that. So that is why choosing the right platform is very useful, so they can walk you through exactly what you should do. And I think you are right about that. When you do give people too much choice, they tend to get overwhelmed. The thing that totally surprises me is I've already sold a couple of the biggest package, which is $5,000. I've sold only one of a $1,000 item, and I've sold obviously multiples of the $20 and the $50 and the $100 offerings. So it's just very interesting, you know, when people are going to reach into their pocket, when you give them an option, how much they'll pay. And yesterday someone funded for $5,000, and I don't know her. I've never met her. I don't think. I went to her webpage. I was so excited and thrilled that happened. But I didn't actually know her. So the other two people that did come in at that level, I did know them. They were one was my mom, I'll have to say that. But so it's very interesting. When you do give people choices, I think you're right. They tend to shut down and they're not sure what to choose. And when you're a student of marketing, you know that will paralyze people. So
But apparently, yeah, you did your research and you went directly to the source who have access to the data. And apparently, seven choices is an optimum number for a campaign like this. But that is a valuable lesson, even though it's not related only to crowdfunding. I'll just mention this: a lot of musicians, I think, sell themselves short, where all they sell is like the download and the album. You know, always have, because there's a certain percentage of the population who have like those Cadillac or those champagne tastes, and they'll automatically go for the highest priced things because it reflects who they are. You know, they always want the best, or they have the disposable income. And so like a lot of musicians, if you don't give somebody a higher, even though a small percentage of people will actually take you up on it, you know, you're kind of leaving money on the table, or whatever the cliche is.
That's right. So that's been really interesting too, is like, you know, who comes out of the woodwork. So I think when I talked to Brian about it, he said, you know, the thing that we always see in campaigns is there is always that wild card person that just shows up and wants to give you a lot of money. I mean, they don't want to give you a lot of money. They want to take the value of what they see the offering is. Remember, this is not charity. Crowdfunding is not about just, oh, give me your money. It's about you are pre-selling something of extreme value to your fans. And I think that's the mindset that you need to stay in when you go for this. Because if you think of it as, oh my gosh, I'm asking everyone for money and this is horrible and my hand is out and I feel like a carnival barker, which trust me, I've had my mornings. I think I spent the day before yesterday in tears for most of the day just going, I don't want to ask another person. I hate this. But then I had to remember, like, no, I'm not really asking for charity. I'm delivering a thing of value, and people will hopefully pre-buy it. I mean, it's just like when you order shoes at Zappos, you are pre-buying them and your money is gone until they show up at your door, and then you have shoes that you love. So, you know, you have to kind of think of it that way. It's like online shopping.
Absolutely. So there's, I think in one of your email newsletters or on your blog somewhere recently during this thing, you talked about how doing this campaign was something that was really forcing you to go outside of your comfort zone. It was sort of pushing you. It scared you, you know, and you mentioned just yesterday, you were kind of, still dealing with the pressure of it. Even though you're fully immersed and committed to it, you still have these doubts or, you know, and so let's, and this is like a reoccurring, it seems like I've been in conversations that I've had and that I've, this comes up a lot, those voices that we all have in our head, that inner critic. So let's just talk about that. How did you, and I know because we're both students also of personal development and, you know, and you mentioned the word mindset just a little while ago. How important is it, or how do you handle those voices? Like, you could have easily said, oh, this is too big. It's I'm not worthy or whatever.
But how
do you overcome that fear and that little negative critic on the inside?
Honestly, I have to tell it to shut the heck up. You know, it doesn't stop. That's sort of the dirty secret about self-development, right? Self-help and any of this sort of mindset stuff is like, it doesn't go away. It's just about making yourself so conscious of it that you are able to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's, and you know, look, I think for a lot of people, you know, you're very good at what you do. If you're an artist, right, you're very good at playing guitar, or you're very good at writing songs, or you're excellent at singing, or you're fabulous at playing the drums, or whatever it is. But, you know, the reason why you have a job and I have a job, Bob, is most people are not excellent at marketing and promotions, and they want to either have someone do that for them or get better at it. And I've spoken to so many artists in my career, thousands of artists that feel so defeated by this. It is so confronting. I mean, think of how many artists you and I have worked with that won't even say from the stage, hey, please go to the merch table and check out our stuff.
Right.
Or, hey, please come visit us on Facebook because that's selling and they don't want to be salesy. And, you know, it's confronting. And it's the part of your brain that you're not programmed to use is that sort of sales piece. So what is the practice is let it come up, thank it for sharing, and exorcise it and do it anyway.
Right.
That's really the only advice I can say.
What you said about is really important to acknowledge. Even people who are successful still have those thoughts. They still hear the voices of the angel and the devil, whatever, on their shoulder. It doesn't go away. You don't you don't rid yourself of fear. You just learn to manage it.
Yeah, that's correct.
And
I think I blogged about this on New Year's Eve. I sent an email out about. You know, if you don't get out of your comfort zone, you're not growing. And I watched this wonderful TED talk about it. And I really, really believe that. And as I watched this TED talk, I thought this is really, really interesting. And really, really true. And what it was Marcus Taylor, who runs a website for musicians, and that's where I actually blogged about it. He spoke at TED in Melbourne, and he talked about comfort zones. And if you don't get out of your comfort zone, you will never do what you want to do. And he actually created a comfort zone calculator, which is amazing. You can actually go and take it. You can take it at whatismycomfortzone.com, and it's brilliant. I took the test and it was interesting. I was comfortable and really competent in some areas and in others I was not. And so I really, really loved what he had to say. And I took it really to heart about, you know what, this is perfect. The scariest thing you might ever do is push your comfort zone. And so I did blog about it.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's what prompted me. That's what I was referring to. Yeah, and I knew you had covered this recently. And yeah, Marcus and I have exchanged some messages here and there. So it's nice to give him a shout out. That's another one of many, a whole new generation of people that are inspiring you musicians. So I know I'm becoming a dinosaur at this, but. More like that, but I'm still young and vibrant. At least tell me, see, there's that voice in my head now. tell me your.
Oh, of course. Come on.
But no, this is great. I wanted to address that. In fact, I just posted something this morning on my author blog at fulltimeauthor.com. It was about it was sharing something that I actually learned from Julia Cameron, who's the author of The Artist's Way. But she talks about how, you know, she has that voice in her head, but she actually gives it a character. She calls it Nigel, and her inner critic is she's just turned into a flamboyantly gay British designer.
So she can just tell Nigel to just shut up, right? Yeah.
She reduces it to like a whiny, you know, or cartoon character or something, and you don't take it as seriously when you treat it that way. So you can have some fun with your own mind and for your betterment. But this is great. This is great stuff. Do you have like a URL or where if people are listening to this and they can?
Yes, please. If you'd like to come and see what's on offer for the final days of this Rocket Hub campaign, I'd love it. It's bit.ly/Ariel, that's A-R-I-E-L, Rocket Hub, capital A, capital R. Or you can just visit me at cyberprmusic.com, and there's plenty of slidey bars and things pointing to how to get a hold of me.
Cool. And if people visit this, and I, if it's like Kickstarter, this page will be up even after the campaign's over, perhaps?
It probably will be, but, you know, certainly I will be blogging about all the confronting moments and that moving forward, just because I think that's definitely needs to be talked about at length if anyone's trying to do this, because it is quite a trip,
oh, yeah.
To say the least.
No doubt. But I was just saying, people can go here and just sort of observe how you did this, and you know, model it for their own campaign, or you know, borrow things that work for them. Or
yes, please do.
So awesome. This has been great talking to you. Good luck with the rest of the final days of the campaign, and I look forward to seeing these new books and offerings that you have. And thanks for the work that you do in our field.
Thanks so much, Bob. I really appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye now.
Bye.